Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all the great stuff you're doing for the community, that's for sure. Hey, this program is sponsored in part by the BCTGM and the Kentucky AFL-CIO, and we thank them for their support. Speaking of the Kentucky AFL-CIO, we've got Bill Lonergan, president, on the phone with us today. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, Charles, it's great to be here. How are you?
Bill, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate it. A little bit of interesting news for you guys. You had to send your attorneys back to the drawing board when it comes to right to work in Kentucky. Rumor has it that the judge in the case is looking for something a little bit more definitive.
Well, you know, one of these legal questions and maneuvering that goes on, and you know, we just wanted to make sure we scheduled the appropriate amount of time to have the evidence that needs to be introduced and that taken care of, and making sure that we had the proper types of testimony and folks lined up, so that we didn't waste any time and made sure that we got things on the record that needed to go on the record in order for us to present the strongest case, which we know that we have in terms of the Constitution of Kentucky. So yeah, just a little bit of a change up, but nothing of any real major consequence in that regard. Just basically lining up the ducks a little better so that we make sure that everybody's got the appropriate amount of opportunity to put their evidence in and get their folks that are going to testify, witnesses and such, lined up. So that's good, and that's moving along, and we're still monitoring the case in West Virginia, which, as you know, had been under an injunction for numerous months now. So a lot of these cases around the country, Charles, and I think folks are, finally starting to wake up that, what's good for the goose isn't really good for the gander, apparently, mm-hmm. because when, it comes time for other organizations to provide free benefits to anybody, then it's off the table. But when it comes to unions...
Oops, we're losing Bill Wander again. I'm not sure if we actually lost him or not. But yeah, right. What we're talking about is in the case of right to work. Okay. Let me try and explain this. The unions are required to pay or to provide legal services, representational services for all people within the bargaining unit without paying for it. Okay. Now, that's like me saying to you, I'm going to drive to work every day, but you're going to pay my gas and you're going to pay my parking. And I get to drive my car, and you can drive your car or you can ride a bus or whatever. But, hey, Bill, we got you back.
Yes, sir.
There
okay.
we go.
And, as you were mentioning, it's, actually a mandate for unions to cover folks that decide under this law that they just don't want to pay any dues, but yet when they get fired or disciplined in some manner by an employer, they have the absolute right to do what every other union member that's paying dues has, which is to file a grievance, which sometimes, as you know, can end up with a multi-step process of ending up with the arbitration, which is a third-party adjudication that requires lots of time, lots of energy, business representatives and shop stewards and testimony, and the cost of arbitration
right.
itself. Charles, and what happens is basically, the union's got to pay those fees and services. Not only that, for collective bargaining, Charles, just think about what the collective bargaining agreement entails, and you're familiar with them. They're, not written on a napkin, okay? They're multi-page documents,
right.
Booklets normally, which address numerous aspects of the labor-management relationship at the workplace. And, the effort that's put in to do that is another huge cost factor. So it's really kind of interesting that, the unions are required by law to provide these services and then have to do it to folks that decide, we'll just take a free ride here. And then we still got to provide them services. And the cost is about to shift over to the other union members because of represents the costs that are incurred. And in fact, we actually have to calculate that very closely to know which kind of member is going to pay dues or a fair share fee and what the actual cost of getting an agreement process.
Right, exactly. So,
process.
You know, and Bill, I remember you very specifically when you were talking to leaders in all of the counties in Kentucky, some very conservative business people were saying to you, well, that just doesn't make any sense at all. How can you compel somebody?
Well, and the same result was had when the Chamber of Commerce itself was asked to provide free benefits to somebody that wanted to remain a member that without paying their dues to Charles. So, you know, as I said before, the old goose and the gander situation.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's where the law comes in, because there's a constitutional prohibition, you know, against unequal treatment.
Right.
That's what part of, you know, this whole argument is going to be about. And it's just, you know, a punitive, we'll say, you know, law that's foisted upon unions and nobody else for not a purpose that is discernible for public policy, but one that is just basically to loosen the resources of unions so that they may just be less effective and employers may get away with paying less money. I mean, it just devolves into that whole, you know, how much is it going to cost argument, and how much wages are going to decrease. And, you know, Charles, that's where the whole thing gets down to. Let's face it, if you weaken unions, if you got less union representation, you know, we all know that lower wages are going to end up being the result. It's just seems to me just a matter of logic, you know. That's why these folks had come across and said that, oh, gee whiz, it's not even bad for unions, this right-to-work thing and stuff. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, how are they trying to expect people to believe that if a union's got to provide benefits, has to, you know, expend resources that they can't recoup, and that they're going to be more effective in that regard? I mean, it's just a ridiculous notion. It defies logic. And that's why it's so discouraging that this argument has gotten to the point where they've flipped it over into this is about economic development. Well, in a strange way, it is about economic development. If an employer is looking to come to a state that has weak unions and pays less money and has less benefits and workers have less of a voice on the job, yeah, then it's about economic development.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this is a time-old thing. Every time a state brings in right to work, the longer they have it, the lower the wages are in that state. The more potholes they have for a longer period of time, they have less cops, less firemen, less paramedics. And this is, you know, this is just the way it is. And when you start this whole right to work debacle, what happens is labor folks, because they're working under a contract, are the last people to be harmed. So everybody else in the community takes a pay cut of about 20%. They lose their health care. They lose other benefits. The communities and the government have less money through taxes to pay for the things they need to pay for, so they provide less services. And this is the community that these politicians, i.e. your governor, wants the entire state to live under.
And you're right, Charles. And it's interesting to note that when they aim their, you know, their gun at unions about prevailing wage, they went and shot the non-union workers, because those are the ones that are now getting their wages cut while the union craftsmen and building tradespeople are working under the contracts that they previously had, which was normally or in a large number of cases the prevailing wage. So, you know, and as we've had these examples of this all over the whole state coming in, and particularly down in Louisville, and we could talk about that if we were getting close to a break here.
We are getting close to a break, so we'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about that. How's that?
Great.
Fantastic. We've got Bill Lonergan, president of the Kentucky AFL-CIO, with us today. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
Good news, people. At last, congressional Democrats have gotten a clue, grown some spine, and are beginning to act like, well, like Democrats. In particular, a majority of Dems in the U.S. House are responding to the rising public demand that decent health care be treated as a right for everyone. rather than being rationed by profiteering insurance conglomerates. Nearly 6 of 10 in the House have now signed on to Representative John Conyers' Medicare for All bill, which is being carried in the Senate by Bernie Sanders. So, hallelujah, progress. Yes, but there are many speed bumps to overcome before the Democratic Party gets onto the moral high road of politics. Representative Nancy Pelosi, for one. When the leader of House Democrats was asked if the party should make health care for all a major issue in Congress and in the 2018 elections, she replied with a flat no. Basically, Pelosi says the American people aren't ready for it, by which she really means that the narrow slice of the public that inhabits her world, health industry executives, lobbyists, and campaign donors, aren't ready. Meanwhile, a good 60% of regular Americans are damn sure ready, telling pollsters that our government has a responsibility to ensure that everyone gets the care they need. Let's be blunt. When it comes to the fiery leadership that America's grassroots people want and need, the Democratic Party establishment is weaker than Canadian hot sauce. When you've got 60% of your party's rank-and-file congressional members ready to go, and 60% of the public is also ready to go, it's time to go. The National Party's leadership must get going on health care for all, or the leadership itself must go. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help push both the party and the health care for all issue forward, go to nationalnursesunited.org.
We are the BCTGM, the union representing bakery workers. We have been joining forces with our members and thousands of community partners across America to end corporate exploitation of workers across the globe. Our campaign has its roots with the Mondelez Nabisco's firing of 600 workers at its Chicago bakery and replacing them with workers earning poverty wages in Mexico. College and university student activists have reached out to our global campaign, and the BCTGM is proud to welcome the more than 20 million students across America as partners in defeating this greed-based business model. Student voices have changed the world, and these future community and national leaders will add energy and heightened spirit to the BCTGM's consumer boycott of Mexican-made Nabisco products. Join the fight. Help change the world. Invite the Nabisco 600 team to your campus by visiting fightforamericanjobs.org. Follow us on Facebook at Nabisco 600 BCTGM Local 300.
You don't usually get a stock tip from a 16-year-old, but I'm here to tell you about a different kind of stock. It's called Better Futures, a stock for social change that's not about making money. Instead, you invest to help students like me go to college, which ends up making the future better for all of us. My name is Alicia, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Hey, Russell Wilson here, and I know how important exercise is.
It's essential, it's essential.
With Play 60, United Way and the NFL are helping kids stay active and play at least 60 minutes a day.
Healthy kids, healthy kids.
But what this place needs is you. To donate or volunteer, go to unitedway.org/play60, because great things happen when we live united.
Donate, donate.
Are you guys going to do that every time?
Yes, of course, yes, of course.
Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all great stuff you do for the community, that's for sure. This program is sponsored in part by the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra Members Association and the Fairfax Education Association. We appreciate their support. Joining me today by phone, we've got Bill Londringen of the Kentucky AFL-CIO. Bill, welcome back.
Hi, Charles. Great to be here. Thank you.
Bill, it's always a pleasure. You know, we are talking about communities that want to bring in this right to work for less. It's a negative for the community, any way you look at it. It reduces pay by 20%, reduces the tax base. The only people that benefit from it temporarily are business owners. And you turn around and the politicians that they write campaign checks to. It does not help the constituents by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, and yet you have politicians to say, oh, we're bringing in right to work for less. And we're cutting it. Why don't we make them tell the truth? We're cutting everybody's paycheck by 20%.
Well, Charles, it's interesting how you would say asking to tell the truth, because it was interesting on a radio program down here in Kentucky. There was the Speaker of the Kentucky House who got on, and basically after the interview, I asked him a few questions. He fessed up and admitted, oh, yeah, wages usually do go down in these states that pass right-to-work laws. I mean, he basically said it flat out on the radio, and, you know, of course,
right.
That's been recorded, and, you know, and it was interesting. He must have been paying attention to all the material that we were handing out at the legislature, because that's what we told him, you know, and, you know, basically here are the facts and figures of how this works and what the results are and what the history of it is, and, you know, I recently had...
Oops, looks like we lost Bill again. We're going to get Bill back. Bill, you there?
I think so.
Oh, there you go. We got you back.
Okay. Right.
So, yeah, I mean, you finally get a poll, and if you've got audio for that, please send that to me, because I'd love to play it.
But, we definitely will.
But, I mean, you've got politicians that are admitting to this. Oh, yeah, wages go down. Don't you want lower wages?
Well, they make this other, we'll get more jobs, you know.
It never happens.
Well, you know, we get some folks to come in, but, you know, and we've already done this, Charles. We looked at all the surveys and all the facts and figures about why these people, you know, move these factories around and locate these facilities and make these decisions on site selection and things of this nature. And, you know, the surveys, of course, that have been done by these major publications indicate that right to work is like way down the list there, 15 or 16 on this one list there back in 2016. You know, they all want workers. Skilled workers, they want access to transportation, you know, educated workforce, you know, reasonable utility rates and things of this nature are much more important on every one of these surveys for years and decades. And, you know, these folks that are promoting this thing as a political agenda, you know, act like this is the, you know, penultimate decision, you know, that the company makes. Oh, it's all about right to work. You know, most of these companies, you know, they make these decisions based on things that, you know, are more, you know, tangible to them and you know, maybe more, you know, economically, you know, significant, shall we say, you know.
Right.
And whether or not they can actually get people that will be able to run any kind of facility, whether it's a high-tech, low-tech, labor-intensive, machine-intensive, whatever it is, they want to have folks that, you know, can fill these slots and make the products, you know, and they get this mistaken notion. What they've been peddling here, of course, is about, you know, if this, you get this right to work, you know, you end up with no unions. And Charles, that's another one of the canards that they throw around. It is really, you know, it's kind of disturbing. And I think that's how our governor has been talking about this Brady Industries, this facility for producing aluminum, supposedly, that's coming to Eastern Kentucky. You know, they made this big announcement, and the big thing was, oh, right to work made a big difference, and blah, blah, blah. And first thing I asked myself, man, if I was producing aluminum, I'd want to know what the electricity rates were before right to work, before anything, because that's where the biggest money, you know, is spent producing that product. So very interesting how they can, you know, we'll say twist this, you know, whole subject around and make it look like something that's totally not. And, you know, I think folks are waking up to that notion. And, you know, we're going to bring this before the court, because that's not really what it's all about. That's how we get back to that. And before the break, I was mentioning about the prevailing wage as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is, you know, been used as, you know, a lever to try and, you know, I guess go after unions again, you know. And, again, we had this big project down in Louisville where they didn't necessarily have to pay prevailing wage through the actual state or the feds, because it was a private project, but because they had gotten these incentives and everything from the city, they had this agreement that they would, you know, basically pay prevailing wage on the job and such. And they had a, you know, whole crew of Latino sheetrock workers that were, you know, doing all the drywall in this mega size you know, hotel for Louisville. And you know, right after they repealed prevailing wage, the companies just decided to cut their wages anywhere from $10 to $15 an hour. And they walked off the job. There was about 100 of them. And a lot of the other trades that were on the job walked off with them.
Right.
And now they're trying to organize and, you know, get into the Carpenters Union. which is, would be a good outcome. But, you know, at the current time there, I think they're still paying them the cut in half rate, you know.
Yeah.
It just goes to show you that, look, you know, the union trades folks that are on that job are still going to be making the money under their contract. The Latino workers or the immigrant workers or the non-union workers, those are the ones that are going to get their wages cut.
And, right.
That isn't good for anybody, our economy or individuals or the state or anything.
Right. You know, and when it comes to projects, labor is one of the least largest or least concerning expenses that the construction company has. I mean, if you're building a mile worth of road, the cost of rebar, the cost of concrete, the cost of asphalt, the cost of equipment rental is much higher.
Well, yeah. Yeah, they estimate on the building job, like a hotel like this, that just 20 to 23% of the project cost are related to wages and benefits. That's the general rule of thumb that we've derived from doing all these studies about prevailing wage and such, and that's pretty much been accepted notion that's where we're at in that amount that's attributable to wages and benefits. And you know, Charles, it just goes to show you it's all about, like, making some extra money for the contractor who cut their wages and such. And,
right.
You know, that's basically what happened. He didn't reduce his price to go back to the owner of the project and say, oh, gee whiz, I just cut these guys' wages. I'm going to save a couple $100,000. I think I'll pass it along to you guys. Of course not.
Now, and if you think about it, the difference between prevailing wage for a union person and a non-union person, prevailing wage is prevailing wage. That's the wage within the community. Yes, union people tend to get more benefits and they tend to get a little bit better pay. But if you hire an electrician for $10 an hour, you get a $10 an hour electrician, you know?
Well, you know, Charles, the way we know the way it works out here in the construction industry, whether the jobs are seasonal or temporary in regards to them working themselves out of a job every time they go to work every day, that it basically is a higher wage is called for to attract people to the industry. So we have people that are willing to stand on those 20, 30 story or whatever, how many story office buildings or whatever they're building, or a factory or a power plant or whatever. This isn't some walk in the park for folks. It's hard labor every day.
Right.
They deserve the money they get, and they don't get to work for 52 weeks out of the year in most cases. So, Charles, it makes sense for them to have a decent wage and a prevailing wage that everybody could have a decent standard of living and safe working conditions and a good livelihood.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, listen, Bill, we got to get going, brother. How do we find out more about you and the Kentucky AFL-CIO?
Yeah, on our Facebook, Charles, it's KYAFL-CIO. And our website is AFL-CIO-KY. And everybody's welcome to go to those venues and check out the content. And, of course, as I mentioned, Barry Craig does a great job. But, we get some real good stories posted about all the different things that are going on in the world of labor and politics.
Absolutely. Bill, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate it. Thank you for support, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, Charles. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you. Bill Londrigan of the Kentucky AFL-CIO. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.